From America's frontier, Nebraska, it's time for the Outdoor Connection, brought to you by the Minnow Bucket in North Platte. The Minnow Bucket, nobody has a better selection of outdoor tools and toys for every hunting excursion. Gear up at the Minnow Bucket, 1013 South Jeffers in North Platte. Now, time for the show. Here's your host of the Outdoor Connection, Rick Windham.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Outdoor Connection. If you like birds, like watching birds in particular, this guest this morning may be very interesting for you. I have Nicole Miller on the phone, and she is a naturalist, and I've had the pleasure of listening to some of her presentations and was quite impressed, and that's why I got her on the show. How are you this morning, Nicole?
Doing well, Rick. How about yourself?
Hanging in there.
Even better.
Getting better, yeah. Yeah, we talked about that with the shoulder thing. You've been through that, too, so you know what I'm dealing with.
Exactly. Patience and following those physical therapies.
I woke up this morning. I was sore in the top of my shoulder, and I think it was due to a dream I had last night. And I was
Were you fishing?
No, I was helping at a branding. I was roping and flipping the calves over so we could brand them. We were joking about that in the studio this morning. You know, how many people come up with a dream like that? So, anyway, let's talk about the birds. And then I know you've been on the show before. And for people that may not have, how did you originally get interested in doing what you do?
Well, as far as nature and bird watching and sharing my interest with others, it started as a child. And my dad was a huge influence on me with enjoying all things outdoors, and it just stuck with me. And I've always enjoyed the teaching aspect and the sharing information as well.
Before the show, before we got you on the line, we were talking about it in the previous Mugs in the Morning show, and I mentioned to Tristan that I overheard you giving some of your presentations one time when we were doing some we were both doing outdoor skills workshops with an organization, and I was impressed with how you did it, your knowledge of the subject and stuff. So that's when I first reached out for you to get on it, and I have always been amazed at how much knowledge you have on the subject. As a hobby or an activity, how popular or how big is bird feeding and bird watching in the United States?
It's really consistently been one of the top five outdoor activities in the U.S. for probably a better part of 20, 25 years.
I think one of the last statistics I looked at, they had it at number two.
And that's where it seems to stay, and, right at number two.
Only gardening beat it out, which when I'm thinking about outdoor stuff, gardening just didn't come up on my radar, but yeah, it is. So, and that's great. That means that quite a few people are doing it. And then you said you've been doing it since you were a child, correct?
Right, and I really got into it more once I was in high school. And then, at home we maybe had one or two feeders, not a lot, but we'd go outside and we'd do things. And we also gardened, but now in the home I share with my husband and our two labs, I think I'm up to about 25 feeders consistently.
Oh my!
And it's suburban. I mean, I live in the city, so
it always amazes me too with people like yourself. You know, once you find something like this that you're passionate about, you're always looking to learn more. So it's a constant, and it's a fun thing to do. And it's a constant thing you're doing, but then, like I said, you like the teaching part of it, so you pass that knowledge on, and everybody that gets to listen benefits from that.
I hope so.
I did. Like I said, it got my attention. What's the most unique or rarest bird you've ever seen in Nebraska?
Well, it would definitely have to be the whooping crane I saw a few years ago on one of my March trips out to see the sandhill cranes. My husband and I go every year. I used to take a group of kids from the Nature Center, and we would go out on trips. I've taken friends. It's just an amazing spectacle, and to me, it really bonds, reminds me of the connection that I have to all of nature. Yep. And all of the seasons, to go out and see them dance and hear them call.
Are you coming out again this year?
Yep, next weekend we'll be out there.
Where are you going, if I can ask?
We will. We usually make a drive. We camp at Mormon Island Rec Center outside of Grand Island.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can go down to the Platte River, watch them leave the river in the mornings, come in at night, and then we spend the days driving around past cornfields, and we might even our way all the way down. I think it's actually called the Platte River Road, that goes all the way down towards the Rose Sanctuary near Gibbon, Nebraska.
Right. Yeah. I know exactly where you're at. I've been on the same roads many times doing the same thing.
There you go. And it never gets old. I mean, it's my tradition, although I know spring starts this weekend, and the crane migration is definitely a harbinger of spring. But for me, it's spring when the vultures arrive in Nebraska.
There you go.
Because what? Then you know it's warm enough for the carrion feeders to find their food. And to me, that means spring when I see my first vulture.
Where is it? It's in Ohio, where all the vultures, Hinckley, Ohio, I think, that they flock there kind of like the cranes do here for whatever reason.
Yeah, well, they're very social birds, which you may not think that of a vulture. But, yeah, they're very social birds, and I just think they're fascinating. I've always found them very unique and interesting animals. So
the hooper is on my list for being one of the rarest unique birds I've seen. But two others that come to mind immediately is I saw a harlequin duck one time. I don't know how he got blown this far east, but it was there.
That's amazing. That's wonderful.
And then,
yeah, they're sea ducks, right?
Yeah. They're West Coast ducks. But it was a harlequin duck, and I was up in the sand hills, and it was on one of the ponds up there. And then here at Lake Maloney some years back, I was in the backyard, and all of a sudden I heard a loon. And I got out my binoculars and walked over to the lake and started looking around. And sure enough, I found a pair of loons out there. It's the only time I've
ever
seen them.
I have seen loons at Branched Oak Lake here outside of Lincoln.
It's not often that they come this far south, but that was kind of cool. And I love their sound, their call.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing.
Now, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about feeding the birds and some of the things you need to consider when you're wanting to do that, and go through the process on types of feeders, where you should put them, all those type of things.
A lot of that you can kind of find on some websites or some local resources. Birds need what people need: food, water, and shelter. So if you have a bird bath that you're able to keep clean by changing the water out daily or at minimum every other day, your feeders that you have, depending on what types of birds you're interested in feeding, or, again, it can get pricey to feed birds. So depending on what you want to invest in your feeders and, you know, again, what kind of birds you want to attract, you can hang them. You know, there's ground feeding birds. There's mid-range birds. There's birds that will feed in a shrub. There's birds that like open places. So, again, you almost have to, you know, if you put out some seed in a feeder and it doesn't seem like you're getting any birds, move it, 3 feet one way or 3 feet another way. Switch the seed out to either, you know, if you have black oil sunflower, try safflower seeds or NutriSaf, or try a thistle feeder. So it might just be a little trial and error, but if there's birds around, it might take them a few days, maybe even a week, to find your feeder if you haven't been feeding. But definitely the position of a bird bath and a feeder, and then if you happen to have a tree or some shrubs or a pine tree, or even if your neighbor has some trees, the birds might stage there and then come into your yard.
Okay.
So it's very flexible, I guess, would be the best way to describe that.
Now, I've always heard, particularly when it comes to wintertime feeding, that if you start, it's a commitment. You shouldn't, you know, go half the winter and then stop because the birds have been conditioned to come there, and if you stop on them, then they may have a problem. Is that your finding or what you would recommend as well?
Well, I'd recommend, especially in the wintertime, if you're going to commit to feeding them as part of a conservation effort, not just so you can enjoy their beauty and learn about them and watch their movements and their interactions, then yes, I would suggest if you're able to keep feeding them, don't stop. However, they've done numerous studies on birds that tend to visit feeders, and they almost have a network. They know where the feeders are in different neighborhoods that they visit. So if one feeder gets empty or gets low, they'll move on to the next food source. And of course, you know, they do. They keep looking, but they will still come to your yard for a while. And eventually, if you have to stop feeding or if you're not able to, you know, continue on it, then they will just abandon your yard and you wouldn't have the joy of seeing them anymore. But they would keep going to other people's yards. They're also wild animals. So, you know, we're supplementing their food. They have shown research that feeding birds in your yard has been beneficial, especially with the different, you know, how the seasons have changed, where storms are worse or cold is really cold, hot's really hot. So it does seem to help the local bird populations, the native bird populations, by supplementing seed feed. So it's, you know, if you're able to, great. If you're not able to, they're pretty adaptable. They'll figure it out.
I've tried to put up feeders and, you know, attract some birds, particularly around my garden, because they're great for insect pest control too.
And, yes, exactly.
And then can you attract certain species of birds by certain types of feeders, certain types of seeds, something like that? For example, let's say you really want to see cardinals. What would what might you do just to get predominantly cardinals in your area?
Sure. For cardinals, they prefer platform feeders, so an open feeding space where they either stand at the feeder or they're in the feeder. The ones with small perches, they'll use, but that's not their favorite. So either a tray, or if you have a, I kind of call them a little house feeder, where it may have a roof and then there's sides that come out on either end, and what's called a hopper feeder. So the drains down the middle, and there's a place where they can perch on the sides that's a long, flat area. They prefer that, and cardinals really enjoy just the plain black oil sunflower seeds. They like safflower seeds. They like NutriSaf safflower seeds. It's a different kind of safflower that has a little higher oil content and a little softer shell. So it's quicker, easier, better nutrition for the bird.
Okay.
But again, that's also, based on your availability of that in your area and if you want to spend the money for that.
Okay. We're going to have to step away and do a quick commercial break, but when we come back, I got some more questions for you, Nicole, if you can stay with us.
Absolutely, Rick.
All right. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back after these messages.
A lady by the name of June Chu is a dean at Yale. She has a doctorate in social psychology. Her biography touts her long career helping students, not just academically, but supporting their multifaceted identities. Now, recently, Yale students stumbled upon one of Dr. Chu's multifaceted identities hidden on social media. In a review of a local restaurant, she posted, "If you are white trash, this is the perfect night out for you." The Japanese eatery was not authentic, so it was for low-class folks. After slamming a gym employee, she wrote, "I don't care if you lose your job, I'm sure McDonald's would hire you." And this one, she called local movie theater employees barely educated morons trying to manage snack orders for the obese. Well, after the Yale Daily News published her scathing review, students and alumni of the prestigious elitist university were horrified, supposedly. Dr. Chu deleted her social media account and apologized. She says that she's learned a lot about the power of words. She says her posts demean the values to which she holds herself. In other words, the racist, bigoted person who wrote those racist, bigoted views, that's not the real Dr. Chu. Anyone else would have been fired, but Dr. Chu won't have to apply to McDonald's because Yale placed her on leave until things cooled down. That's the multifaceted identity of liberalism. You talk one game, you play another, and you get away with both.
Professor Wilson?
Yes?
What do I do if I have a business with cash flow problems?
This is science class, Thomas.
Yeah, but people say you know everything. Do you?
Well, oh, look, it's time for our break.
Okay, nobody knows everything, but you can learn a lot fast with Blinkist. Blinkist is an app that takes key insights from over 4,000 nonfiction bestsellers and gathers them into 15-minute blinks to read or listen to. Nonfiction books in over 27 categories, from self-help and personal development to entrepreneurship, science, investing, and more. With Blinkist, you can learn the main points of an entire book in just 15 minutes.
Now, where were we?
Cash flow issues.
Ah, yes. Start with lowering overhead. There are several creative ways you can...
No more, no faster with Blinkist. Right now, radio listeners get 25% off plus one free week when you go to Blinkist.com/big to get this...
Anglers and hunters, pros and beginners, find outfits and gear for every level and class of outdoorsmen at the Minnow Bucket in North Platte. Are you ready for archery season? Stop by the Minnow Bucket and let TJ help you prepare for spring archery or youth shotgun. He has the knowledge and know-how from his lifelong experience of hunting and fishing in western Nebraska. Check out their Facebook page for more details. And stop by the Minnow Bucket at 1013 South Jeffers for all your archery needs.
Here's your forecast on News Talk 1240 AM and 106.1 FM. We'll see mostly sunny skies here for today with a high in the upper 50s. Winds out of the south increase around 15 to 20 miles per hour, gusting as high as 25. Then for tonight, mostly clear skies, a low near 32. Saturday, mostly sunny, high of 64. Sunday, sunshine, a high of 55. Weather is brought to you by North Platte Airport with daily jet service to Denver and beyond. Book at united.com.
Back to the KODY studio for the Outdoor Connection, brought to you by TJ and the crew from the Minnow Bucket at 1013 South Jeffers in North Platte. Here's Rick Windham.
Welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Nicole Miller this morning, and we're talking about birds and feeding, watching, all things associated with that and how much fun it can be. When we left, Nicole, we were talking about... The different feedings and stuff. If you want to get started, is there a general type of feed, type of feeder that you would suggest just maybe to get started to see if that's something you really like?
Yes, absolutely. Like I said, a platform feeder, you can have a hanging one or you could have one on the ground with just some basic black oil. Sunflower seed is a great way to start. I would try to avoid... some of the mixes at first, because you might end up with more starlings than other birds, although they need food too. And if other birds see starlings in an area, they might come in and wonder, hey, what's down there that's good? but if you have a tree or a shepherd's hook, you could certainly get a tube feeder, which is a plastic feeder. I prefer the ones that have the metal openings, just to keep, if you happen to have a squirrel around, they just seem to last better than a plastic opening. But they have just small perches. There's usually six feeding slots. You can buy a little tray to put underneath it that attaches at the bottom so you don't end up with a lot of shells on the ground. And again, that would also provide a place for perching birds like doves and cardinals to sit and pick out of the tray. And just... give it a try. Black oil is a universal seed. You're going to get a nice selection. House finches actually prefer, those are the ones that have some, the males have some purple on their heads and down their backs.
Right, right.
They're very pretty. They prefer black oil to some of the other single seeds.
When my son, my number two son, Isaac, was still at home, he got into a school science project to attract finches, and we put up a couple nests under the eaves of the house, and then he had his bird cam on it so he could run it down and watch it on the computer. And our Finch Cam, we called it. And that was fun watching those.
Yes. Oh, and that's, you know, that's what keeps people feeding birds, is just the joy of watching them and as they change. And if they, we actually had some, a juvenile woodpecker, a downy woodpecker that mom and dad, well, they're, you know, woodpecker parents brought to our yard to feed on some shelled peanuts that I had in a feeder.
I had,
and that was really neat to see, because I don't usually get to see juvenile fledgling birds.
Oh yeah, I was mowing the yard a couple years ago and passed by. I've got some pine trees on the south side of my yard, kind of a border, and I noticed that there were some robins that kept getting nervous every time I mowed that way. And I looked, and just about at eye level, there was a nest with some babies in it. So, you know, I stayed away from that. And it only took, you know, a couple of weeks, and they're fledged and off and gone. But that was fun to watch them while they were there. The other thing you had mentioned is a platform feeder. And a couple times, just to make a real simple one, like out by my garden, I had some trees I was going to eventually get rid of. So I took a chainsaw and lopped it off, you know, flat, about 4 feet above the ground, and put a one-foot square piece of plywood on top with some quarter round on the edges to keep the seed from totally falling off. And that lasted several years while they fed there. Until I,
that's perfect. Oh, that's a clever idea. I love that.
And finally, I took that tree out and then went to some other operations. I wanted to ask about when you're setting it out, what about, you know, if you have big plate glass windows like sliding doors or whatever, is there a concern putting a feeder too close to something like that?
There is actually a sweet spot for bird feeder placement anywhere around where there's glass. You either want to be less than 3 feet away, so as close as possible to that glass, or you want to be more than 30 feet away from windows or glass.
Okay. Because I always hear about how many birds, the mortality rates around birds when they've got plate glass around.
It's very saddening. They have totaled, it was from about, I think the research I saw was maybe 4 years ago, but half a billion, 500 million birds are killed by bird strikes hitting glass every year in the U.S.
Right. And I think about, you know, like downtown Lincoln or downtown Omaha, the big buildings with all the glass. How many birds do they claim?
Again, that's part of that huge tally. I know that there are studies being done on replacement glass for especially office buildings, that it changes the opacity of it, so the birds see it as solid and don't fly into it. There's also, or with the reflection of it, it's different, so it doesn't look like a mirror that they could just keep flying through. But the main reason why you either want your feeders or bird bath really close or farther away is so if a predator comes in, because we have, well, we feed everybody at our house, so we have hawks that hunt. And when that predator comes in, they just, you know, the birds just take off. So if they're closer than 3 feet to the window, they're not going to have enough speed to really injure themselves if they hit the glass.
Oh, that's a good
point. If it's more than 30 feet away, they can clear a building.
Yeah.
You know, they'd be able to go up or go down or go around and not hit the building or the glass.
Okay. What about feral cats? How detrimental are they?
Cats are fine if they're indoors, in my opinion. Feral cats are very detrimental to the bird population. And a lot of times they kill them and don't eat them.
Yeah.
Or if you have your house cat outside, they may kill birds just for sport, because that's what cats are, predators. So, yeah, there's probably another study, I'm sure, or multiple studies on feral cats.
I'm sure.
And birds, but they do take a dent in the population. And that's another thing you kind of have to be aware of when you're feeding. We have a deck that a cat could hide underneath. and attack the birds that come to our feeders. We haven't had that problem, but it's also something to be aware of and to watch for.
I hear music in the background, which means Tristan is telling me we're about out of time. One last quick question. Do you have any recommendations where people can go to find resources on bird feeding?
If they have a local birding specialty store, I would definitely suggest them. If they, even on, just online, there's a lot of good birding resource websites, Cornell, Audubon. They have feeding information, bird ID information, just a lot of great resources to get started in this wonderful hobby.
Very good. Nicole, thank you again for being on the show once more. You will be back.
I appreciate it, Rick, and I look forward to it.
We'll see you later. We'll see you somewhere down the road. I'm sure we'll be at the same event again sometime.
I can only hope.
All right. Take care.
Thank you.
That's it for this week, folks. We'll see you next time on another edition of the Outdoor Connection.